This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Calamity, pain, and grief are typical of what Dr. Frank Heiler witnesses daily in his work as an emergency room physician in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Dr. Heiler is also a poet whose work has been published in the Atlantic Monthly and the Georgia Review. Now he has a new book called The Blood of Strangers, Stories from Emergency Room Medicine. Let's start with a reading from the first story, The Unknown Assailant. Two screaming men have just been wheeled on gurneys into the emergency room, one middle-aged and balding, the other young and overweight. The younger man, who became Dr. Heiler's patient, was screaming, "I don't want to die. Don't let me die."
"You're not going to die," I replied, thinking he might very well. "We'll take care of you." The bullet had clipped his aorta, torn through one lung, through the diaphragm, and into his belly. He lay on his side, his chest split open, while the surgeon struggled and cursed. With both hands, I held his beating heart out of the way so the surgeons could see. His chest was like a misshapen bowl, dark and rich, filling again and again. "Jesus Christ, this guy's making us work," Rosa, the surgery resident, said, scooping out handfuls of clotting blood which slid off the surgical drapes onto the floor. Sweat beaded up on her nose above the mask, then fell, drop by drop, into the wound. There was so much blood they couldn't see what they were doing, putting in dozens of misplaced stitches until some began to stick and the bleeding slowed to an ooze. He was cold by then, despite the anesthesiologist's best efforts, and the heat turned all the way up in the room, his blood full of acid and losing its ability to clot. "Okay, Dr. Blake," the attending surgeon said. "We've got to stop and just hope he doesn't break loose." It was a long night in the ICU, transfusing him with unit after unit of blood and plasma. Toward morning, he was no longer recognizable, swollen from the fluid, bruised, but miraculously alive. When I came to see him, before sunrise, I found a police officer sitting in a chair reading a magazine. The policeman yawned when he saw me, put down his magazine, and came out to talk. "He's a bad one," he said, gesturing to the monstrously distorted figure. "We think he killed at least two convenience store clerks last year." "Really?" The cop nodded. "Killed them both after he got the money." He made a shooting motion with thumb and forefinger, right through the head. "We've been after him for a year." I vaguely remembered the crime, front page news, convenience store clerk shot dead by unknown assailant, and I looked at my patient as if for the first time. He didn't move at all, letting the machines do their work. I learned the full story from the other wounded man. He was not my patient, but that morning I went to see him anyway. Ray Solano, lying down the hall, had been extraordinarily lucky.
Who was Ray Solano, and what did you find out about him?
He was a man who had been shot by my patient, and who in turn had grabbed the gun from my patient and shot my patient. So he was the victim in the crime.
How did you feel that after, you know, helping to save the life of a man who was a stranger to you, finding out after you succeeded with the surgeons in saving his life that he was a robber? He had shot several men.
He was a murderer. Yeah. Everything shifted a little bit. I mean, initially we thought we didn't know what we were dealing with. And it was only after a few hours that we learned that, that my patient was a murderer, that he had killed a couple people in the past. And it was very disconcerting. You had to feel like the ground was unsteady beneath, under your feet.
Does anything change in you as the doctor if you think you're treating a victim or if you think you're treating the killer or the shooter?
We like to think it doesn't change what you actually do in terms of your actions and in terms of your taking care of somebody. But certainly it changes how you feel about what you do.
How does it change that?
At least speaking honestly now from me, from my perspective, you're more dedicated when you feel that you're taking care of someone who's a victim. Although you try not to be. I mean, you're trying to suspend judgment, but you can't help but be judgmental.
So did you talk to the guy whose life you helped save, the guy who turned out to be a killer?
I did. I talked to him. For the most part, we had superficial interactions. But he thanked me. He would thank me for saving him or helping save him. He was intelligent. He was articulate. And he was fascinating. There was something very compelling and fascinating about him because he had a quality of awareness, even though the actions that what he had done, he had done these terrible things, and yet he was aware and knowledgeable. And you had the sense that he had insight into them.
You work in a hospital in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Do you see lots of the after effects of crime?
Yes, certainly. Particularly when I was a resident, doing my residency training, we saw a lot of that. We saw a lot of shootings, a lot of stabbings, a lot of violent crime, and the aftermath of those kind of acts. And it was certainly something that you couldn't escape from in a busy trauma center.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes people use emergency rooms because it's the weekend and they can't get a hold of their doctor, or it's the middle of the night. And, I mean, the symptoms might just be, you know, a rash or a terrible sore throat that really requires medicine immediately, or, you know, breathing problems, something that possibly could wait, but you feel it needs attention right away. And there you are, while heart attack victims and motorcycle accident victims and so on are coming through the doors, and you realize that, you know, your injury is, or your sore throat or something is nothing as bad as that. You once saw somebody in the emergency room who was there for basically a very, very bad sore throat, and you were going to prescribe an antibiotic. Ask the guy if he was allergic to anything, and what happened next?
he said he thought he was allergic to something, but he wasn't entirely sure. And so I gave him a medication that was similar to, but not identical to, the medication he thought he was allergic to. And he had what's called an anaphylactic reaction, meaning a life-threatening allergic reaction that nearly killed him right there. And I had to do a lot to bring him back, and happily, fortunately, was able to. But it was a very near thing. He almost died. And he almost died as a result of a medication which I had given him for a problem that was really very minor and that would have likely gotten better on its own had nothing been done.
What did you do wrong?
I gave him a medication that he potentially could have been allergic to, given the information that he was telling me. And it was about a 10% chance that he would be allergic to the medication I gave him. And it happened. That 10% was, in his case, 100%. And he almost died.
Were you trying to save time?
No, I wasn't
checking out what he was allergic to.
I wasn't trying to save time. It was certainly a busy night, and I was a lot of things going on at the same time. True anaphylactic reactions are very rare, and so they happen very, very uncommonly. And it was one of those situations where I think I didn't quite believe him fully, because he said he was allergic to a number of different medications. And so I gave him one that he should, by all rights, have not been allergic to. And yet he was.
So what lesson did you take away from this horrible experience?
A couple of different lessons. I mean, one is that you should be as careful as you can be, of course. And I've certainly... it's changed my perception of allergies, certainly, that people say. But the other is just how uncertain the work in the ER is and how so often things can come up out of nowhere. It's sort of like a minefield in that sense. There's always, you think you've covered the, you've done a thorough job or and yet there's always more. There's always the unknown. There's always the implacable waiting for you. And it happens, that quality is very common and it's always with you when you go in at night, particularly, and there's no other doctor in the hospital and you're waiting and you're just waiting for something like that to happen. And you never know when it's going to happen or whether you can handle it if it does.
My guest is Dr. Frank Heiler. He practices emergency medicine in Albuquerque, New Mexico. His new book is called The Blood of Strangers. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Dr. Frank Heiler, an emergency room physician, poet, and author of the new book, The Blood of Strangers, Stories from Emergency Medicine. When you meet somebody, when you meet a patient in the emergency room, you know, they're a stranger to you, and you have to go by what you see and also what the patient tells you if they're conscious and able to speak. It must be interesting to hear, as a writer, it must be interesting for you to hear how patients describe their problem. And I'm wondering if you find that you learn a lot by the way something is described, you know, the language that a patient uses.
I would say I learn a great deal by the way something is described. Whether it's described stoically, whether it's described histrionically, the way it's just the body language. I mean, you learn a lot in a very short amount of time when you meet people in that situation and in the emergency room at any rate. And the question you're asking yourself is do they have something that's really serious that could kill them, or not? Do they have something that will go away or will get better on its own? And that's probably the single most important question you ask. And how somebody tells their story influences you a lot in deciding which one of those two possibilities they have.
Tell me more about that.
Well, some people are very stoic, and you get a sense about them when they're complaining of pain, or you get a sense that the last place they want to be is the emergency room, and that what brought them in here into the ER was something that was very unusual and frightening, and. There are other people who quite honestly like being in the emergency room and like the attention that comes with people fluttering around them and starting IVs and that sort of thing. So you get a sense of people quite quickly when you're just talking to them, whether they look afraid, whether they feel afraid, or whether they're not, whether they're saying things but look comfortable and look even contented. So that initial interaction that you have with someone is very important and very you learn a lot very quickly.
I want to ask you about something unusual that happened while, I think this might have been while you were a resident. Mm-hmm. One of the people on the medical staff said, "You have to come see this. This is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in the hospital." And they took you over to one of the patients, put a flashlight in the patient's mouth, and crawling around in the patient's mouth were maggots. What happened?
Yeah. There was a fly in the ICU. That's what happened. And when people are paralyzed, and meaning giving medications to paralyze them so that the ventilators and the other machines can work optimally, they don't move their mouths, they don't in the normal way, and as a result, if there is a fly there or if there are flies around, they can lay eggs in the patient's mouth and maggots can be the result. And this is one example. I mean, there were maggots in this man's mouth that had been unnoticed and that were noticed one day. I'd like to say, though, that the book, I mean, that is hopefully not so much about that kind of thing. I don't want to give people the wrong impression about the book, that it's those kinds of sensational stories. A lot of the stories in the book are about smaller things, less dramatic.
In your book, you write, and this is talking about patients who you say, I like them when they're brave in the face of it. I like the old women who say they're ready, that they understand the surgery is dangerous. If they die, they die, who smile and pat my hand and tell me to send their children in. I like the men who flirt with the nurses, even though the EKG is unmistakable. Tell us more about what you're thinking here.
One of the things about emergency medicine is that you see people at their best sometimes. You see people at their most courageous, where they know that they've got something that could kill them, and they still manage to carry themselves with some kind of grace and courage. And you do see that. And that's very, very admirable, I think, when you see people confronted with existential questions in an immediate way, still acting within themselves, and I have seen that not many times in the emergency room.
Are there images that you've seen in your work doing emergency medicine that have really haunted you?
Yes, certainly, certainly.
Tell us about one of them.
Well, one of them was a young man, a patient who came in because he couldn't breathe, and he was in his late 20s, and the only way he could breathe was when he was sitting up, sort of almost in the fetal position, leaning forward. It was the only position he could breathe in comfortably, and I had never seen him before, and we started talking, and turned out he had Hodgkin's disease, which is a kind of cancer that usually is fairly treatable nowadays, but in his case had failed everything, and basically his lungs were full of this cancerous tissue, and to the point where he just didn't have any good lung left. But we got to talking a little bit in the ER. It was in the middle of the morning, early morning, and he told me that he had been accepted to medical school, that he had gotten Hodgkin's disease, and he was waiting. He was hoping that they were going to hold a place for him in medical school. And you know, he and I were almost exactly the same age. I was maybe a couple years older, but there he was, and I looked at his chest X-ray, and his lungs were just completely full of tumor, and he was pretty much at the end, and he actually died a few days later. But when we were talking, he was alert, and I really saw myself there too, and it was something that really stuck with me,
because he was so like you.
Yeah, I mean, we were the same age. We were the same, you know, in a lot of ways. And yet, for whatever reason, I was there. I was the doctor, and he was the patient. And things might easily have been the other way around.
Does practicing medicine make you feel more vulnerable?
Yes, without a doubt. One of the things that you learn quickly is how vulnerable all of us are, and it's hard to pretend otherwise when you see those kinds of events as often as that we do in the ER, and the fragility of human life is very evident to us, I think.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thanks a lot for having me.
Dr. Frank Heiler practices emergency medicine in Albuquerque, New Mexico. His new book is called The Blood of Strangers: Stories from Emergency Medicine. This is Fresh Air.